The Asian Classics Institute presents A Guide to the Bodhisattva Way of Life, Part 3, with Geshe Michael Roach. Recorded live in New York City in October of 1997. This is the beginning of Class 6.
Last time we were talking about this pen, and we have to go back to that pen, okay? And we did a little bit of an emptiness meditation on it. That meditation comes from Kirup Jay, which is another major student of Jetsun Kapa, and also from some early Sakya tradition, of which our Vajrayogini tradition is a part of that lineage. So first thing is to just look at the pen normally, okay? Just look at it as a pen. That's called matak machepa, means unexamined. You're not trying to figure out its ultimate existence or anything. You're just looking at it as a pen. So we'll do like a few seconds of thinking of it as a pen, okay? Okay. Now, pretend you're like an Aborigine from the 12th century, and you walk in, and you don't know what a pen is, and all you see is this guy holding up a black and white stick, okay? You're just going to focus on the raw data, the black and the white and the cylinder, because that's all that your eye really sees. Your eye cannot see pen. Your eye only has the capacity to see colors and shapes. So now, don't think of it as a pen anymore. Don't think of this black and white cylinder as a pen anymore, okay? Just see it as a black and white cylinder, okay? Turn off the pen mind. Okay. And then we did it on and off. You know, you can turn it on, you can turn it back off. You can turn it on, you can turn it off. And it made you aware of the fact that seeing it as a pen, or its being a pen, is not from its own side. The penness is coming from your side. And you have this mental image of a pen that you impose on it. And we drew it last time. There was raw data, which is black and... Let's make it... See, it's just a black and white cylinder. Okay, in fact, let me do it again. It's really just that, okay? That's the data your eye picks up. Black and white cylinder. And then your mind pictures a nice, well, a pen. Okay. And if you get really good at it, this, you can see that this is like a little, you know, Jung called them archetype or something. You know, this is a really just a mental picture of a pen. And then your eye picks up the black and white cylinderness, and it transmits black and white cylinder to the mind. And then the mind jumps on it and says, oh, that suggests a pen. And it superimposes pen on that black and white cylinder. Okay? And we were talking about, I think in the Friday night class, if a dog walked in here, they wouldn't impose that at all. They would impose black and white chewable object, similar to my bone, you know? No, and they would impose it like that. You see? They would look at the same black and white cylinder, but they would only see something to be chewed upon. You know, they wouldn't conceive of it as something to write with. And if you think about it, both conceptions are valid. Okay? I mean, if you're a dog and that's all the bok choks you have in your mind, if that's all the karmic seeds you have in your mind, why not? It's a black and white chewable thing. It is. It isn't a pen for a dog. But it is a pen for a human who can use the pen in a certain way, and who has the karmic seeds to see it as a pen. So both are valid. You know, you can't say one is more correct than the other. If you're a dog, what's the use of a pen? If you're a human, you can chew on your nails. You don't need a cylinder to chew on. Okay what I mean? They're both valid. You have to get used to that, okay? And this is called the raw data. We've been calling that raw data in Tibetan. Say dakshi. Dakshi. Dakshi means the raw data, the black and white cylinder. Okay? That's all your eye can see anyway. Did you ever think your eye was seeing a pen? Your eye can't see pen. Your eye can only see colors and shapes. That's in Abhidharma, all Buddhist scripture, that's the limitation of your eye. Your eye can only see colors and shapes. Okay? You can't be identifying it as a pen with your eye alone. Something else is doing that. Okay? Dakshi means the thing which gets called a pen, the thing which is referred to as a pen, okay? The raw data, if you will, okay? And then there's this mental image of a pen. And in scripture, it has a couple of different names. Most simply, Ming, which means name. It just means name. Okay? In Majjhimika philosophy, when you say we label the black and white cylinder with the name pen, we're not referring to the sound of the word pen. We're referring to the concept pen, which is the picture in your mind of a pen. So don't get confused. When they say imputed only, in name only, in word only, only nominally, what they mean is name in the sense of a concept that you impose on the dakshi. Okay? It's that, and if you get good at it, when I hold the pen up and I say, turn on the vision of a pen, you'll catch yourself, the mind is applying it. And then when I say turn it off, you'll see it disappear. It's like stripped away. But it's like there's some kind of bright, it has a brightness about it. And it's a mental construct. And you're imposing it on the pen. And when you stop thinking of the pen as a pen, you're stripping it away. And then you impose it again, and then you strip it away. If you want to meditate on emptiness, that's a very good exercise, okay? This is the collection of the parts of the pen. Is the collection of the parts of the pen the pen? Are they the same thing? Do the parts equal the whole, according to Madhyamika? No. Okay? That's tricky. Okay? It's okay to say my arm is not Michael Roach. But what about all my appendages and my torso and my name Michael Roach and my mind? Are all those together Michael Roach? Madhyamika says, no. Okay? And that's where most people get confused. And if you read the commentary in the reading that you're not going to get tonight, somebody will say, you know, Gyaltsebje says, oh, look, the pen is not, your body is not your arm, your body is not your leg, your body is not separate from your arms and legs, but your body is not your arms and legs and your mind altogether either. And then the other guy says, wait a minute, that last one I don't get. You know, the guy in the commentary, the opponent says, I don't get that last one. And he says, think about it. That black and that white and the collection, the whole of the cylinder and the black and the white is not yet the pen until something else happens. What? Until you think of it as a pen. Okay. Why do you think of it as a pen and a dog thinks of it as a chewable object? Your past karma is forcing you to see it that way. Okay. What's the point of all this intellectual blah blah? You know, I happen to use it as a pen. Okay. Can you use it as a pen? Fine, no problem. It's a bunch of colors and shapes that your karma is forcing you to see as a pen, and that works, that writes, okay? No problem there. So what's that got to do with my liberation? How can that make me happy? Why am I in this class listening to this guy talk about a pen? Master Shantideva was doing very well before when he was talking about anger and morality and generosity, and now he's got sidetracked onto something about the pen. You know, I can see how not getting angry makes me happy. I can see how being generous makes me happy. But why, knowing that the pen is my construct, how's that supposed to make me happy? The point is, this pen will wear out. And the hand holding it will wear out. And the guy who has the hand will die. And they're all going to wear out for the same reason. The karma wears out. The karma to see this as a pen wears out. The karma to see this as a human arm wears out. The karma to see myself alive and to hear my mind think will wear out. And that'll be called dead. You know, we'll call that dead. In the same way that the pen doesn't have to be a pen, I don't have to be dead. I don't have to see myself that way. I can choose a different set of karmas. I can collect different karmas. The Buddha promised liberation from four things. Kega nachi. Say kega nachi. Kega nachi. He did not say, I'll make you more calm. He did not say, I'll help you get along with everybody. He did not say, I'll make a perfect society. He said, I will get you out of birth, ke, ga, aging, na, any kind of sickness, and chi, all death. You know, much more radical than, you know, Buddhism as learning to be friendly or learning to be calm or something like that. This is learning to be not dead, okay? And learning to not get old, you know? And that's much more profound. That's what he taught. It's only possible because I'm empty. It's only possible because my karma can force these parts to appear as a tantric deity in this lifetime if I collect the right kinds of karma. If I can. Okay. If I learn them and then do them. I know some people in this room who've learned them and told me they're not doing them. You know, so I'm like, well, and then they come and tell me all these terrible things happening to them. I'm like, you know, did you do your book? And they say, oh, I'll get to that later, you know. Of course you're going to see weird things if you haven't done your book. Okay, your life will be like that. And continue to be like that. And then you'll see yourself die. Right? Another word for that image is called tanye, which means term. And another word for it is da. which is another word for a sound or term. You can say term, okay? They both mean term. Very ancient words. They all mean the same thing. So you've got this, we can call it name, but now you know name means a concept, a mental picture. The name is imposed on the raw data by your mind, forced to do so by your past karma. If you like the pen, it's because of your past good karma. If you hate the pen, it's because of your past bad karma. If you could care less about the pen, it's what I call background existence in your life. It's because you had ignorance in your past. That's responsible for all the neutral crap, neutral stuff, okay? And the dog imposes this on it, okay? Right. What is the imposer is called Dokche. So remember, the Dakshi is the basis of the name or the thought, which is the raw data. That's raw data being presented to your eye. And Ming and all these are different names for these two things shining in your mind, two pictures in your mind. And Dokche is the state of mind that imposes this on the raw data. It's the imposer. It's the one who bends the transparency and imposes it. Okay? It labels, it names, it thinks of the raw data as something. Okay? And the Dokche is the main thing being run by your karma. Right? Yeah. Right. It's a very good question. What he's asking, if you noticed, when I told you not to think of the pen as a pen and to withdraw this picture from the pen, your karma forced you to understand my words and you had the illusion that you were choosing to do it. That's a little subtle, okay? Yeah. Okay. That's another story. Now, one more thing we're missing here. Dakche. Say Dakche. Dakche. Dakche means the result of that process. After you think of the raw data in a certain way, and you impose that image on the raw data, and then you have pen. Okay? Alright? Then you have a pen. Where is that pen? Is it in your mind or is it in the raw data? If matak machepa. Matak machepa means where we started with the pen, remember tonight? That's where the pen is. If you don't ask, it's there. Okay? Matap machepa means, let's not get into it. You know, just use it to write on the transparency, okay? Don't worry about it. Matap machepa means, not worrying about where it is. You can use it. You can go stand in front of a matap machepa yellow cab and get your matap machepa legs broken. Okay? They work. It works. What is it? It's my karma forcing me to see certain data a certain way. Where does it exist? Is it in my mind or is it outside in the data? Don't ask. The minute you ask, you've lost it. Okay? You can live in the world as long as it's matak machepa. When we started with the pen tonight, it was matak machepa. Unexamined. Okay? When you start examining, you're already into finding emptiness. Okay? So matak machepa, the pen exists. You can use it. Okay? You can use it. It functions. Nothing wrong with it functioning. Okay? That's a little delicate. Okay? A lot of blank stares on that one. Okay. We'll go on to... Now, I was thinking Dr. Sykes was going to ask the $54,000 question, but he didn't. He got close. Somebody's supposed to ask me, what about the raw data? You see? Do these rules apply to the raw data as well? Or is the raw data really out there? You know, is there really a black and white cylinder out there? Or does this stuff all apply to the black and white cylinder as well? You're supposed to wonder, okay? Why do you think in the years that I've been using this example of my boss coming in and screaming about the JCPenney order, I was talking about the emptiness of your feeling about the boss. I was talking about his emptiness of being nice or not nice, right? And I was saying the fact that one set of colors and shapes comes into the room, and the person who doesn't like Michael Roach finds it quite amusing that Michael Roach is getting yelled at by the boss, and Michael Roach finds it quite painful to get yelled at by the boss, proves that the boss is neither self-existently nice or self-existently mean. That proves it. It proves that the way we feel about the boss is a projection coming from the minds of each person in the room. If he was self-existently nasty, his wife would have divorced him already, except she owns half the company and there's this other stuff. If he was self-existently nice, I wouldn't feel bad when he yelled at me. You know, I would be like, thank you, you know, I understand I screwed up the order, you're right, you know, it's good that you care about me. You know, but the fact is that two different people sitting side by side, looking at the same colors and shapes, take those different, completely different. Okay? So whether the boss is good or bad is a projection from our side. But is the boss himself a projection? We never got into that. I've been avoiding that, okay, for years. But now the time has come, okay? We have to examine whether the raw data is really raw data, okay? We have to examine that. And I didn't want to do it because you have to be mature in your thinking, A. B, you have to have a lot of virtue, which you have because yen la dida tam je du, tu be shirab din du sung. You've been through the whole Bodhisattva Charavatara. You have all that virtue of hearing the whole text. You have the ammunition not to freak out when we get to the boss's emptiness, okay? And the question is this. This is the question that comes up in your mind automatically. Should come up on your mind. It has come up often. I think, I don't know if Jim Halpern's here. He used to ask that question. Okay. He gave up already. Oh, yeah, he used to ask this question a lot. So here you finally get the answer. Say, Kansat, Ki, Dakshi, Yang, Dakya, Yinam? Okay, question mark, all right. Kangsak means person. We're not talking about pens anymore. We're not even talking about my boss. We're talking about you, okay? If your name is Tessie, I'm talking about Tessie, okay? If your name is Kim, I'm talking about Kim. If your name is Andy, I'm talking about Andy, okay? It's yourself, okay? We're on to the big emptiness, the emptiness of you, okay? Why? That's the first one you'll see directly. When you see emptiness directly for the first time, it's your emptiness. It's John's emptiness. Okay, John sees John's emptiness first, directly. Okay, in fact, that's why it has such power to liberate you from your mental afflictions. Okay, so Gansak means person. Kansaki Dakshi is that raw data of the person. The raw data of the person. If you wanted to present the raw data of the person in a very simple way, like if you wanted to divide the person into their most basic parts, there would be two broad categories of stuff that make Michael Roach. What are they? Mind and body. Okay? Mind and body. If you're going to get fancy, you could break it into five parts and call it the five heaps, which is the same thing. You can basically boil the five deeps down to mind and body and a little stuff called the idea of Michael Roach. Okay, but we're not going to, let's scrap the idea of Michael Roach. That's a little complicated. Michael Roach's mind, Michael Roach's body are the two big parts of what we call me, what I call me, in the same way that the black and the white and the cylinder are the main components of this pen. So the main parts of a person are their body and mind. Those are the parts we have to look at. That's the dakshi. Dakshi means the collection of stuff that's being thought of as Michael Roach. Okay? In the case of the pen, it's the black and white color and the shape. In the case of Michael Roach, it's the body, his mind, and those that stuff which all taken together we think of as Michael Roach. We put the label, or we put the concept, we impose the concept of Michael Roach on those parts. Okay? So we call it the basis of the projection, which is dakshi. Okay? Dakshi means the basis of the projection. Okay? Yang means even that basis, which is my body and my mind taken as a whole. Okay? Dakyo means Dakyo means a projection. Okay? Just a picture, a mental picture imposed on a collection of parts. Okay? Dakyo means that, exists in that way as a projection. Yinnam means, is it? Okay? Yinnam is the scriptural way of saying is it. Tibetan doesn't have punctuation marks like we do. They use nam for the question mark. By the way, if it ended in duk, you'd say dukam. If it ended in nga, you'd say rungam. And it follows the... It's kangan dam nam bam ram nam sam tam. Okay? And that's the big question. The big question that should have occurred in your mind by now is, I understand that the way I feel about the boss is a projection. I understand that one boss, one collection of parts, a oval redness, smaller oval, darker red, square whites in there, and a red wiggly there, you know, and sounds coming out, you know, rather loud decibel sounds coming out. I understand that if I feel good about it, it's because of my past good karma, and if the guy sitting next to me feels bad about it, that's because of his bad karma. And I understand that that boss is not good or bad from his own side. But what about his very existence? Is that also the same way? I mean, each sound that I hear coming out of him, each redness, all the shades of redness to his face as he gets more and more angry, right? Are they also the same way? You know, if I was like a different kind of being, would I even see those as boss? And the answer, of course, is no, you wouldn't. Okay, if different beings sitting in the room, like an ant or a dog, they don't even see the boss the way you see the boss. They don't think boss. To them, it's just threatening humanoid or something. Okay, I mean, they don't see boss any more than they see pen. They would see chewable object. Okay, so the very existence of the boss in your room is also a projection. That's true. Okay, the raw data is also a projection. Okay, there is no base data, but we'll get there. We'll get to that. Okay, so the big question that should have come up in your mind at some point when Michael Roach was up there talking about his boss was, is the boss himself the same way? You know, if there were two radically different beings in this room, would they see two absolutely different things? And the answer is, of course, they would see two radically different things. That's why a hungry ghost could be in the room and see a threatening animal. You know, Master Shantideva could be in the room and see a beautiful, lovely, shining tantric angel entering the room because of his karma, because he has different karma. Okay, no contradiction at all. No contradiction at all. Any more than this could be a chewable thing or a pen at the same time. No problem. It's the glass of water if you've studied that. Okay? It's the glass of water. This basic distinction between the two kinds of emptiness. What two kinds of emptiness? The emptiness of Michael Roach. And then the emptiness of my arms, my legs, my head, everything else. Leads to two great parts in the ninth chapter of the Bodhicaryamrita. Master Shantideva finds it necessary at this juncture to start discussing the parts of the person, because he has already proved that the whole is not self-existent. Okay, me as a whole could become a tantric deity in this life, because Michael Roach, as a whole, is not self-existent, and is only a projection forced on me by my mixed past karma. That's why I'm having a samsara right now. That's why I'm having ups and downs in my life. That's why I can have a close friend who becomes a not-so-close friend. My own karma is fluctuating. This stinky, stupid, horrible fluctuation of karma that's responsible for all the changes in your life, for the fact that samsara, what did you used to say? Never mind. It's so bad, okay? It's that fluctuation, okay? So, because my karma is mixed, my experience of my body, my experience of my own thoughts, my experience of the people around me will continue to fluctuate up and down. People will continue to be friends, and then distant, maybe enemies, then friends again, and like that. Because I'm forced to see them that way. Okay. So Master Shantideva says, but didn't you wonder if the parts themselves are the same way? You know, is the color itself the same way? Is the shape itself the same way? Are the colors and shapes self-existent? Or is it possible that some other being could come in this room and not even see a cylinder? Is it possible that even the cylinderness is not self-existent, and even the black and whiteness is not self-existent, and that some person could come in this room and validly see a purple and orange pen? Okay? And the answer is right. So we have to discuss not only the emptiness of the whole person, but we have to discuss the emptiness of the parts of the person. Why? The day you see emptiness directly, you will see the emptiness of the whole person. Okay? You will see the emptiness first of you as a whole. But intellectually, you get there by understanding the emptiness of your parts. Okay? During the period before you see emptiness directly, you start to understand the emptiness of your arm or something like that. Okay? The emptiness of your thoughts. Okay? Yeah. Could be, yeah. They could have the karma to see nothing at all. Now, would that be a dakshi that they're imposing nothingness on, perhaps? You see, we had a debate like that one night in the monastery. It went for hours. And does non-existence exist? Yes. So, that's another story. Okay. You could see that they, upon the same raw data, they are projecting nothing. Yeah, you could say that. Okay? They just wouldn't see it. But that also would be a projection, you see? Emptiness itself has its... I mean, sorry, non-existence itself has its own emptiness. That's a... Cook it. We debated it one night. So here are the two great kinds of emptiness. Kansaki, dagme. Kansaki, dagme. Kansaki means the person, okay? Meaning you, Michael Roach or Leon or whoever you are, okay? Ki means of. Dak means, in this case, a self-existent self-nature, okay? An inherent self-nature, okay? Self-nature. Me means doesn't exist. The lack of any self-nature to the person. Meaning, the person has no nature of their own. What do you mean when you say of their own? What do I mean when I say of their own? Independent of my projection, forced on me by my past karma. There is no such nature to any object in the universe. That's emptiness. When you're talking about a person, it's the emptiness of the person. What? The fact that when I look down and I'm aware of Michael Roach, it's only because I'm looking at the sum of the parts and I'm conceiving of it as Michael Roach. Forced to do so by my past karma. Forced to see a human who has to go through this ups and downs of samsara because of my lousy past karma. My past karma, which is like this. Even the good karma from my past is what we call dirty good karma. Why? It wears out. Okay? Sakche. Sakche kile. Okay? Suppose I start focusing on my parts, okay? By the way, it's very important that you try to get it, okay? We'll never go through the ninth chapter again in the near future, right? It's too hard, right? And there are thousands of lousy explanations of emptiness running around in the world. And you're getting it, the real one. So it's really your very serious responsibility to get it straight this time so that you can teach it to other people. Seriously, okay? So get it straight. Say, Chögyi Dagme. Chögyi Dagme. Chö means what? Dharma or thing. Okay? Thing. Okay? Thing. In this case, thing. Chögyi Dagme is the same, right? The fact that no thing has its own nature. As opposed to the one that came before was what? Self. Me. Person. The person. The fact that no thing has any self nature. Couple of questions for you. Is Michael Roach a thing or not? Well, an existing object, I am, right? Sometimes when you say thing as opposed to person, you mean pens, chairs, carpet, okay? You got to learn something about this particular division. In Buddhist philosophy, when we talk about the emptiness of things, in the same breath, as a division of emptiness as opposed to the emptiness of a person, that word thing only refers to the parts of a person. So thing here does not mean outside thing, and it doesn't mean things in general. It only means the parts of Michael Roach. Okay, you have to get used to that. Many people have never understood that. Okay, do all objects have their own emptiness? Yes. Are we talking about the emptiness that all objects have? No. What are we talking about? In Tibetan, you say, Gansagi Dagme Dan Chögyi Dagme Nyiso Chögyi Dagme. The emptiness of things, which is the emptiness of things that we're talking about when we talk about the emptiness of the person and the things. When you say person and things, you're talking about the emptiness of the person and their parts. So don't get tripped up by the word things here. Okay? When you say, I'm going to teach you two kinds of emptiness, one is the emptiness of you, and the other is the emptiness of stuff or things. Don't forget, things is always talking about your parts. You could have called it Gansaki Chashe or something, you know, the emptiness of the parts of the person. Unfortunately, this has mixed up people for centuries. Still, the Tibetan monastic textbooks say, don't forget, when we're talking about the emptiness of the person and things together, things means the parts of the person. And it should, because what's the natural question that comes up in an intelligent person's mind when they hear about emptiness is, yeah, but is the existence of the boss himself also projection? Forget whether he's good or bad. It should come up in your mind. Forget talking about the pen. I want to know if there's a cylinder there, a black and white cylinder from its own side, or is that also a projection? Okay? Question? Yeah, the parts, you can take many parts of the person, but we're going to stick to mind and body because it's even more basic than the five parts of a person called the five skandhas or the five heaps, okay? Okay, later. Catch me in the break. Okay. So we're getting sort of an onion skin theory, I call it. Or I think of a microscope, like in the diamond business, you can focus on the top of the diamond, the cover of the diamond, or you can move the loop, you know, that cute thing. If you move it slightly, you're focusing in the middle of the diamond and you're checking for black spots. When you focus on the top, you're checking for scratches on the diamond, which can only be made by another diamond. And then you focus into the diamond and you're changing your focus into the diamond. And you're looking around, it's like being in a room and looking for black spots. And then somebody says, is it chipped on the bottom? And then you move your loop and you focus on the bottom of the diamond. You see? You're looking through the diamond in all the cases, but you're going down different levels of magnification. or it's like an onion skin. You know, you're like going down different levels of magnification. So, when you're examining the parts of a person, you're going to be examining whether or not the body and the mind are also projections. Okay, I accept that the idea of Michael Roach is a projection. I accept that if a dog walked in here, they wouldn't say, oh, there's Michael Roach, you know. Or think that even, you see. They wouldn't even have that conception of me that way. And I admit that if a roach came in here, you know, another one, and they would look up and they'd see this life-threatening, huge, massive mountain that sometimes is shifting, like there's an earthquake going on in this mountain, called life-threatening mass. You know, their mental image, that bright thing with the light coming off it, is totally different. Okay, we admit that, but what about my parts? You know, would they even see something red up here? Would they even hear some sounds coming out? Would they even imagine that I had a mind or was thinking or was animate, you know, alive? Okay, because those are the two parts to me. The question is, are the parts of Michael Roach also self, are also projections or not? Are they also projections or not? And we have to look into that, okay? That's the examination of Chökyi Dagme and Kansaki Dagme. Now we're on Chökyi Dagme. We're looking about the emptiness of the parts, okay? We'll go one more minute and then we'll take a break. See if we got anything interesting here. Say suk ki sokpe dul charam. Suk ki sokpe dul charam. Suk, well, let's not go that way. Let's talk about this first. When you are going to decide whether or not Michael Roach's parts are self-existent, you have to decide what parts you're going to look at. Okay? Like with a pen, we could choose three basic parts. I've only mentioned three parts, right? The black part, the white part, and the cylinderness, the cylinder. I've only mentioned three parts. Okay? If I wanted to get fancy, by the way, the next step down with the microscope would be, let's examine the parts of the part. Okay? Like you see, there's this part hanging off here, and there's this part here, and it's a half cylinder. Okay? To decide if that was self-existent, I think we'll have to look into the self-existence of the of this part. Okay? Because if this is not self-existent, the rest is not. To get to the self-existence of that, let's look at the top half of it. Okay? Because if that's not self-existent, neither is the bottom half of it, and then neither is all the top, and then neither is the pen. But let's look into the half of that. You know? Okay? Let's look into a quarter of the clip. Nah, eighth. Just an eighth. But you can't really get to that unless you look at a 16th. You know? And ultimately, I could keep going, you know, until what? Seriously, no. The atom. The atoms. You know, we'd get down to the atoms of it. You know, if the atoms of it are real, then it's real. Right? Because the atoms are the smallest part of the pen. You know, if all of us believe deep in our hearts, due to the kindness of Mrs. Melvin, in the first grade, you know, and your own experience and your own heart tells you there must be a real small piece of that pen that you could get down to and decide whether it's self-existent. And then if it was, the whole pen would be self-existent. And if it wasn't, then the pen wouldn't be self-existent. But quit getting fancy. Quit fooling around. Let's go straight down to the basic building blocks of all matter. Let's get straight down to the atom. Because if that part is not self-existent, then the whole pen is not self-existent. And if that part is self-existent, then the whole pen is self-existent. So let's cut the crap. You know, get straight to the, what they call it, the meat of the matter. You know, get down to the atoms and decide if the atoms are self-existent or not. Are the, because we all of us sitting here, believe that when you hit your head on a piece of cement or something, it's because of those stupid atoms in there. You know, there's something in there that's hard. There's some bits of something in there. You know, Michael Roach can talk all he wants, but there's something about a Pakistani taxi driver's bumper that's hard, that really exists, and breaks my leg, whether or not it's empty or doesn't matter. But there is something exists there down at an elemental or an atomic, at an atomic level. There is something hard there that breaks your leg. Okay, you believe that. Your heart believes that. You can talk about how you perceive it. You know, do you perceive it as long or short? Do you like the bumper or not? You can talk all night about that. But there's something in the bumper that breaks your leg. That you believe that there's an atom in there. There's some kind of hard stuff at the bottom of the bumper that's making it hard. You believe that. So let's go straight to the atom, okay? Sukh means physical matter, meaning the physical body. Sukh can either mean, in Buddhist philosophy, the object of the eye consciousness, in which case it should be translated as visual matter or something. It's sometimes translated as form, which is a bad translation, which I use sometimes. Okay, visual physical matter, colors and shapes, basically. Okay, but in this context, it refers to the skanda of sukh, meaning your body, all your physical matter. Okay, sometimes the word is used for visual matter only, and sometimes it's used in a broader term to mean all the physical parts of you, your body. Okay, sukh. Sukhi tsokpa. Tsokpa means the sum of the parts. The sum of the parts. Okay? The sum of my arms and my legs and my torso, which if you think about it, is the sum of my ankle, my forefoot, my sole, my upper foot, and my toes, which if you think about it, is the sum of the joints in my toes, which if you think about it, is the sum of the left side and the right side of the joints in my toes, which if you think about it, and then you can keep going like that, okay? We won't go like that. In the end, it's dul tarab. Say dul tarab. Dul means particle. Tarab, we had it last class. Ultimately small. Okay? Ultimately fine. Dul tarab means atomic particle. Okay? Atomic particles. When you're talking about, is Michael Roach's body self-existent? Does it have any objective reality from its own side? Big question. Important question. Do I have any objective reality from my own side? Maybe I don't, but how about my arm? How about the bones in my arm? How about the hardness in the bones in my arm? At some point, there must be some kind of objective reality. We get down to this question. Are the atoms in my arm objective reality or not? Okay? Do they have any existence from their own side? Because when I tell you, look at the pen, and I say raw data, you believe there's black and white there from its own side. You do believe that. You can discuss whether it's a pen or a chewable object, but everybody in this room thinks there's black and white stuff there. Okay? So is there any physical reality to my arm, okay, at the atomic level? You know, do those atoms exist from their own side or not? That's the emptiness of my arm. That's the emptiness of my body. And the answer is no. Okay? And the answer is no. How could there be? It's the same thing as the pen. It's the same thing as Michael Roach. It's the same thing as my boss being nice or bad. Come on. It's just another level. It's just another level. Okay, don't think that you're like interpreting raw data. There ain't no raw data, because the raw data has its own raw data that you're interpreting, and that raw data has its own raw data that you're interpreting. And I just made up raw data for your convenience, because I didn't want to freak you all out. Okay, there is no raw data. Okay, why? Because you can get down to the atomic level of a taxi cab's bumper, the steel, the iron atom. And they'll still be the left side of the atom and the right side of the atom. And then they'll be the upper side of the left side and the upper part of the left side. the bottom part of the left side. And it's endless. And at any given time, your mind is organizing it into a whole. You know, at any given time, it's only, again, a bunch of parts that your mind is being forced to think of as a whole by what? Your past karma. So if you happen to be an electron microscope molecular scientist, you know, and if you happen to look into that microscope, and if you happen to see that these atoms, you're being forced by your karma to see those atoms. They don't have any more existence than my boss being mean or nice has any existence from its own side. They don't have any more existence than that. What's the point of all this? By the way, you could get lost doing this, right? I mean, if you sit down and meditate on this and there's like three wacky people here in next class, don't blame me, okay? You know, if you sit there and figure out that there is no raw data and you start feeling lost, you know, you would start feeling lost. That's why we don't teach this to people who haven't heard it about it, you know, who haven't had some preparation, who haven't had the first two parts of this year. What's the point? The point is that your karma can force you to different levels, the same, like it's as if you're floating in the ocean or swimming in the ocean, and your karma can force you down to different depths. You can live at atomic level, you can see things at an atomic level, you can see things at a molecular level, you can see things at a freckle level, you can see things at a hair level, you can see things at an arm level, you can see things as a human body level, you can see things as a tantric deity level. All those levels are there. And your mind, according to your karma, could be forced to live in one of those levels. And in fact, it is. And that's why there's five realms of existence. And that's why there's hell beings. And that's why there's animals. And that's why there's deities. Because each one is being forced to see the world at a different level. And all those levels are valid. And they all really exist. They all really exist. So the point is not to get lost and worry about, oh, geez, maybe I'll get, you know, fall overboard and go to some other level, you know. Like, I could get stuck in atoms for the rest of my life, you know. You know, I could be, like, stuck in, you know, and all these electrons whizzing around my head the rest of my life. I mean, what if my focus shifted and I was suddenly thrown into seeing the whole world as atoms, which is possible. What keeps me here in this reality? It's your karma, okay. How long will it keep you here? God knows, you know. How much karma did you collect before you got here? Will you die tonight or not? And where will you go on the next level? You know, where will your karma shift? The shift called death is just a shift in your perceptions. Where will it bring you next? Now you're starting to get the sense that reality is like the Moscow Hotel I used to talk about. It's this huge hotel in Moscow with... They were very proud, like the communists wanted to make the biggest hotel in the world. So it's like 5,000 rooms. And they're all like these horrible cement square block rooms, you know. You get lost in that hotel, it's hopeless. I've been there, you know. I mean, you start to see reality as like that. There are thousands of different realities that you could be experiencing tonight, but for the kindness of Mr. Karma, you know. Mr. Karma is making you stay here for the time being. You have to collect good karma to assure your reservation at the suite, you know, the penthouse suite. Seriously, you know, because you could be thrown into any level by your karma, you must undertake those deeds which would force you to see your body as a tantric angel in this life. And you can, you know. So rather than getting disturbed by these thoughts, you should be encouraged, you know, it should make you happy. You should finally see that it's possible in this life to enter a tantric angel's body. No problem. Okay, that it should comfort you rather than disconcert you that there is no raw data. It will be whatever you collect the karma for it to be. How do you get that kind of karma? Do the bodhisattva activities. Where can I find out about those? Take the course you just took for the whole year. Okay, He's giving you the information in advance. Then he tells you why you're going to need it, right? Keep those bodhisattva vows. Act like a bodhisattva. Your body will change. You know, you will see the body differently, okay? But otherwise, by the way, you should get a sense too of the hopelessness if you get cast adrift in all of those possible levels of reality. You're in trouble. You're in big trouble. You know, you're here right now. You can hear these things and you can do something about it. If you lose it, and losing it means, you know, like disrespecting your lama, failing to understand these things, not coming to class, not keeping your book, not tracking your vows, not watching your morality, not even knowing what is morality, you know, then you're setting yourself up to drift like endlessly, you know, and it will be millions of years before you get that. I mean, Buddhist scripture says millions of years to get to a place like this, to where you hear these things. Because the other possibilities are endless. They're endless. The other rooms in the Moscow Hotel are endless. Why? Because there's no raw data. There is no raw data. There is no reality beyond what your karma is forcing you to see. It's both a... It's called Kinyan Chembo. Say Kinyan. Sorry. Yeah, Kinyan Chembo. Kinyan Chembo, K means it's a big potential for profit. Nyan means it's a big potential for loss. What do you call that in investing? It must be a word still. Well, big potential for loss and big potential for high risk bonds. Okay, I don't know, right? But this stuff is high risk bonds. If reality is empty, high risk bonds. It's a high risk bond. You know, if you keep your vows, if you learn about compassion, if you act kindly towards everyone, you can turn this body into a tantric angel's body. And if you do the opposite, you can just cut yourself off and drift into 1,000 other rooms in the Moscow Hotel, you know. And eventually you might get back here. So get the feeling that that's the way it is. That's true. That's true. Okay, we'll stop. Then after that, we'll talk about the emptiness of your mind. Okay, yeah. Of course. John says, are you saying there's no self-existent data out there, or there's no data at all? Can you get run over by a car? So there must be some data out there. Okay, is it self-existent? No. So he's properly saying self-existent data. Okay. We're going to get that right after this.
Okay, wait.
It doesn't have any objective reality either. You got to get used to that. If you could get down to that level, you know, if there was a Walt Disney cartoon about getting real small, down to atomic level, and you could get into the steel, the iron atom, and be down in that level, you would also see that that is also a projection. What I'm trying to say is, there's no such thing as atoms. And just get used to the idea. There's no such thing as atoms. Okay? There isn't any such thing as atoms. And you got to get used to that idea. You know, you could get down to the subatomic level of a taxi's bumper, and what made it hard is not atoms. Okay? You got to get used to that. What's making it hard, if hardness hurts your leg, is your bad karma. There aren't any atoms making it hard. Science is flatly wrong. Okay? You got to get used to that. What's making a bumper hard is your karma to experience it as hard. The karma may be expressed in something that, if you have the karma, you could see as atoms. But that's not what makes the bumper hard, and it's not what gives the bumper its solidity, and it's especially not why the bumper broke your leg. Okay? According to Buddhism, you can lump all of those together and say it's karma. According to science, you can get up to steel is harder than bone, but you still can't explain why it broke your leg and not somebody else's leg. Okay? And the Buddhist viewpoint is more inclusive and correct. It's also more useful, meaning you can reach a place where you don't have to suffer anymore and where you don't have to die anymore if you see things with this worldview. The other one is primitive and incomplete, and people will understand that eventually. You see what I mean? There will come a time in this planet when each person sees that that is not A, it's not complete way of viewing the world, and two, it doesn't work, and three, it especially doesn't work for people's happiness. You can make things that fly, you can make things that go real fast on the ground, but people still get hurt, and people still die, and people still can't get along with each other. Science is incomplete. That way of viewing the world is incorrect. There are not such things as atoms. There is no such thing as atoms. If there's anything that makes a bumper hard, it's your past karma. It's very interesting. It's really profound. And that way of viewing the world will drive you into a Buddha paradise. You know, it's very profound. Okay. Let me go a little bit farther, and then I'll take some questions. In the Friday night class, by the way, we decided the next Friday night class would just be a free-for-all. And people are going to bring up all their questions, because we've been talking about viewpoints. You know, 5% of your viewpoint is still Judeo-Christian. It's in your guts. 5% of you still believes in this guy with a white beard up there. You know, if you went down in an airplane tonight, there's some percentage of odds that you'd be praying to Jesus or something, okay? Or God, you know, really. And that's not a bad thing. I mean, Jesus is probably a Buddha, almost certainly a Buddha, and that's another thing. But I'm just saying, there's still a part of you that has this worldview, that does believe in a creator who's running the show, especially when you're falling down in an airplane. And then there's like 90% of you, which honestly, truly, sincerely, until a few seconds ago, believed in atoms. You know, you thought that's what made bumpers hard. It's not. It's your karma. It's definitely not why you broke your leg and somebody else didn't break their leg. But those two phenomena, the hardness of the bumper and the fact that your leg was in front of it, are both caused by the same thing. It's not like one is caused by atoms and the other's not. It's not like that. The same reason that the bumper is hard, the same explanation for the hardness of the bumper is explaining why you were standing in front of it when it crossed the crosswalk and broke your leg. And that's a good worldview. And that's the correct one, and that one can lead you to enlightenment and will lead, you know, I believe millions of American people to enlightenment. We just have to replace the old idea. The ideas evolve, and that was an okay idea for the last few centuries. And now we have to evolve into a higher worldview, which is actually correct. Okay, and it's not incomplete, and it's not irrelevant to human beings' happiness. It covers both. You see what I mean? Okay. We have to cover... By the way, I will do some questions at the end, so maybe I'll tell people they can go if they want, and I'll do all the... you know, all the other ones, maybe in one shot, okay? Because we have a long way to go tonight. Proving the emptiness of your mind. You see, when you think of the bumper of a taxi, your mind is ultimately thinking that there are atoms, and your mind does believe that the hardness of the bumper came from the atoms and not from something you did in your past, okay? You believe that. In the same way, you believe something about your mind, okay? And this is it. Don't forget, we have to cover both of the parts of you, your body and your mind. Say, Shepe, Kechigme, Gyun. Shepe, Kechigme, Gyun. You know, when I talk about, or when you look around at the Quaker house, and you see the walls made of cement, then you believe that there must be some little tiny particles that are all packed together making those walls and making it hard. It's not true. There are no little bitty things packed together making it hard. What's really making it hard? Your karma. What made the wall itself? Your karma. That's like a static reality. We're not talking from 6 o'clock to 7 o'clock or something like that. We're talking in one moment, You are not a collection of atoms. You are rather a perception forced on you by your past karmas. That is the reality of your body. Okay? Now, you may have the karma to see atoms in there. In that sense, there are atoms in there. But that's not what's making your arm hard. And it's not what's giving your arm reality. The only thing giving that arm reality is your perceptions forced on you by your past karma. Okay? Now, is it true for your mind as well? Okay? For mind is a little bit slippery, more slippery than the body. You have to think, what is the equivalent of an atom for the mind? You know, what is the most basic building block of the mind? And I propose the following, which is what all Buddhist philosophers have proposed throughout history, the present moment. Okay? Think about it. The present moment. Your present moment of consciousness. Your present moment of awareness. The fact that in this instant you are aware of this room. That is reality for you, right? That's like an atom. In the physical world, it's atoms that make up stuff statically in one moment. But in the history of my mind, what makes up an atom of my mind, in a sense, is the present moment of consciousness. I'm aware at this moment. I hear your words. I see you standing there. I can see when you move your arm. I have an awareness of this present instant. And that is the building block of the mind. The mind is a concept applied to the collection, not of atoms, but of moments of consciousness throughout my life. The collection of all those present moments throughout my conscious life, I call the stream of my mind, the stream of my life. That's Michael Roach's mind since 1952 to 1997. That's Michael Roach's mind. What? The collections of present moments glued together and conceived of as Michael Roach by my mind, in the same way that all those little atoms are conceived of as Michael Roach by my mind. Okay? The mind also is a projection. Get used to the idea. Okay? On what? On the collection of present moments since the day you were born. Okay? By whom? My mind forced by my karma to do so. Okay? And that's why I have the experience of a mind. That's why I can hear myself think. Okay? Get used to it. What's the raw data? Moments of present consciousness. Present moments of consciousness. My mind in the present moment. Take enough of those together, we can call them Michael Roach from 9 o'clock to 10 o'clock. Michael Roach's mind from 9 o'clock to 10 o'clock. The collection of all those scenes of my life, of all those awarenesses of my life, lump them together like we did the white, the black, and the cylinder, and impose on them the idea, this is Michael Roach's mind during the last hour. Okay? It's just another projection. Now let's go and see if the raw data is a projection also or not. Okay? I lost you already, but let's go further. I had time to think about it, and I had a great blessing this weekend. I had a retreat, and all of it came clear to me. I had a very intense retreat, and it all came clear to me. So anyway, each moment of what you call present consciousness has no more existence than those atoms. Why? That's also a projection. Why? Because you can split it up into three moments and say the beginning of the present moment of consciousness, and then the duration of the present moment of consciousness, and then the ending of the present moment of consciousness. Because even though we can't be aware of it so well, we know that the present moment of consciousness must have had a warm-up, must have had a duration, and must have had a shutdown. You know, even though we can't be very aware that what we call the present moment of consciousness must have had a beginning, middle, and an end itself, we can think of it. I mean, you know that it's true. The beginning of the present moment of consciousness came a millisecond before the end of the present moment of consciousness. What I'm trying to say is the present moment of consciousness, even though it seems to be a single unitary thing, we know it's not, and it must have three parts called the beginning, the middle, and the end, and somebody is thinking of it as one thing. Oh, who's that? Mr. Karma. Okay? Mr. Karma is forcing me to experience my present moment of consciousness as one thing, and it's lying to me and fooling me again. You know, looks like one moment of consciousness. It cannot be. There must have been a beginning of that moment of consciousness, a middle of that moment of consciousness, and an end of that moment of consciousness. And I must be, my mind must be projecting onto that my present moment of consciousness. You see? As you can keep splitting the body into its subparts and subparts and subparts, you can divide the present moment of consciousness into its beginning, the beginning of its beginning, the beginning of the beginning of the beginning, and etc., infinitely. Can you find a self-existent building block of consciousness? No, there's no such thing. There's no such thing as an atom, and there's no such thing as a present moment of consciousness. There is no such thing. Why are you having this experience? Your karma is forcing you to think this way.
Okay.
Very profound. Your mind itself has no objective existence beyond your projections. You are projecting it also. Okay. Why? Because you can keep going down through the onion skin, and at the middle of an onion, what do you hit? Nothing. Okay? That's another proof of emptiness. Okay? You can't be seeing what you're seeing. It's impossible. It has to be a projection. Okay? It's impossible. There isn't such a thing as a present moment of consciousness. That's impossible. No more possible than an atom. They're both impossible. You are projecting onto it something that's not there. Okay. What do we call that exercise where you go through the parts, you know? Am I my body? Am I the parts of my body? Am I the parts of the parts of my body? And you finally get down to there ain't no atoms and there is no present moment of consciousness, no matter how hard it's, no matter how strongly it seems to be there. And no matter how strongly your heart wants to say, along with the rest of humankind, there are atoms, you know. There is some objective reality, you know. It's not there. There is no such thing. Why do we do it? Why do we think that? Two things. Say matak, machepar. Let's stick to that right now. Matak, machepar. When you're, I mean, how does raw data get to be raw data before you blow it up? Okay. I mean, it did feel like raw data at the beginning of class, right? Okay. There was a black and white cylinder out there. Okay. That's fine as long as you don't look too close. What is that expression in English, you know? Is that it? Until you, as long as you don't, well, don't look a gift horse enough. No. You know, until you look too close, it's fine. You know, there is a black and white thing. I mean, when you are focusing, when I say think of it as a pen, now think of it as a pen. And when I say now withdraw the thought of it as a pen and see it as a black and white cylinder, the exercise is you are examining its penness. Okay? But you ain't opening that can of worms called let's look into its blackness. Let's look into its very existence of anything there. I'm not asking you to do that. Let's do it again. Look at it as a black and white cylinder. Look at it as a pen. But in neither case did I say, examine whether there is any physical object there at all. Okay? I didn't open that can of worms. That's called matak machepa. Matak machepa means let it be. You know, let it be. Matak means don't examine it. Machepa means don't analyze it. Matak machepa means if you don't examine it, if you don't analyze it, that good old black and white cylinder was doing fine out there on his own. before you started asking about his atoms and everything, he was there for all of us, okay? Before you started opening up that can of worms by examining it, he was just there in a fuzzy, unexamined way. Your whole world is like that, and that's fine. No problem. Majjhimika says, no problem. The whole world works. Matak Machepar taxicabs run over Matak Machepar legs. And you got to go to the Matak Machepar hospital, and you get a whopping Matak Machepar bill. Okay? And there's no problem. You know, everything exists. You can use a pen. It works. Matak Machepar. Okay? When you start analyzing it, then you find its emptiness. Okay? But we'll get into that. As a projection, a reasonable projection, by a reasonable normal human mind, who's being run by normal old reasonable Mr. Karma, you can use it reasonably to present a class to a group of people. No problem. Matap machepa. Okay? Without asking about its emptiness, blah, blah, blah. Just unexamined, it works. Okay? No problem there. No problem there. By the way, Buddhas, when they get enlightened, they still use Matak Machepa pens. Okay? No problem. Okay? Gautama came to this planet. Gautama spoke words. Gautama probably scratched something in the dirt for his monks. No problem. They use them. You can use them. They are a projection of your karma. They don't have any ultimate reality. There is no atoms in this pen, and you can use it. Okay? No problem. You got to get used to that. Okay? Tanye petseme dup. Tanye, do you remember? It means word or term. And that's that state of mind where you're just, there's a part of your mind which is labeling it black and white cylinder, and you just leave it like that. Tanyepa. Tsema means that correct kind of perception. A better word would be valid perception. Valid perception. It's okay to say there's a black and white cylinder out there. You don't have to be a Plato or a Socrates to use it. Okay? It's okay to say that. Tanyepa tsema means normal perception which uses those mental images. Dup. Dup means establishes the existence of this pen. There's a part of your mind which sees black and white, interprets it as pen, under the influence of your past karma, thinks of it as pen, uses the product of that process called a pen, and everything is fine. No problem. No problem. Okay? That's how we live. Even Buddhas in their Buddha paradises are using objects in that way. They are thinking of them a certain way. What? As what? Total bliss, ecstasy. They can't think of anything any other way. Okay? Every object is creating the same feeling in them. They are forced, poor guys, by their past karma to see every single object as totally blissful. Like, for them, this is like, you know, pure gold, shining, blissful object. I mean, when they touch that, they get what you get when you do your best things. Okay. Okay. All right. Tanya? Yeah. By the way, someone asked me to put the English up here, and it kind of ruins the fun of it, you know. I like you to struggle and try to translate. What I did think was, a compromise I worked out, if it's okay with John. Maybe we'll give out the answer key two homeworks later or something like that. You know what I mean? So you see the classical answer and the classical translation of all these things, like before your final. But since people are behind in their quizzes often, especially staff, I hesitate to do it immediately. Oh, so translate it. All the objects in your world can be established as existing through that reasonable perception that thinks of them in certain ways. Without analyzing their ultimate nature. Don't ask me to repeat it, okay? Okay. By the way, that last one, Madhamma Chepa, describes how the black and white cylinder is before we started class for you. You know, you were happy up to that moment because we had some plain old raw data that Michael Roach was leaving alone. Okay? That was almost self-existent, right? I mean, there was something out there and it was sort of comforting. Okay, maybe I think of it as something to chew. Maybe I think of it as something to write with. But at least there's something out there. By the way, I'm not saying there's nothing out there. There is something out there as long as you don't examine it. You don't look into it. You know, with that plain old state of mind that pictures it as a pen, that pictures it as black and white cylinder, you can live in a world like that, and you do. And you will continue to when you leave this room. And it's not the point that you somehow space out and go walk in front of taxis, okay? That's not the point. It's not the point at all. You have to live in a world like this. The point is to make it a paradise. You know, it's not to get into the fact that really there's no raw data. You get lost in that, there's no benefit to that, it's stupid, it's crazy, it's a perfect way to waste your life, okay? No, that's stupid. The presenting emptiness like that and saying you should go meditate on that and live by that is obviously wrong. Buddhas don't do that. They live in paradises where they are conceiving of things as things, but incredibly blissful things. That's the point of understanding the emptiness of them. You don't space out in the place between atoms somewhere, okay? No benefit to that. Obviously no benefit to that. But people have done it. Many people have done it. Many people have taught that as some kind of goal. It's no kind of goal. You can see that. You can sense it. You can smell it. Okay. The point is, if you don't examine it, there's a pen there and you can use it. And when you get to be a Buddha, you'll still be using unexamined pens. Okay. They'll just feel different. And they won't leak or... and they won't run out of ink. Okay. And they won't run out of ink. Okay? They won't leak. And they won't run out of ink. They really won't run out of ink. Okay? What makes it run out of ink? It does it run out of ink. And there's no such thing as running out of ink. Your karma to think of it as having ink runs out. And that applies to all the relationships you ever had in your life. And if they were unhappy in the end, and if they changed from happy to unhappy, from love to even hate, think about it. It's the same thing that makes the pen seem to run out of ink. We want to live in a world where you don't have that happen anymore. That's what got me into Buddhism class, was those kinds of relationships, okay? And it should you too, you know? I mean, that's happiness. That's what you want. This worldview, unlike the worldview of science, unlike the worldview of economic theory, unlike the worldview of democracy, unlike the worldview of capitalism or communism or socialism, unlike the worldview of science, creates a perfect world. So it's more cool. All right. Say, Tanye, Dakpe, Daktun, Sawe, Sena, Manye. But if you start looking to find a part of any object that has its own existence, independent of your projections, good luck. See you next year. You know what I mean? Because you will go down through level, through level, through level, through level, through level. You'll get to what's called an atom with physical things. You'll get to what's called the present moment of reality with your mind. And you'll suddenly discover you can't stop there because that has parts too. And that too is a projection. And you've got to now look into its parts and you're going to be gone for a long time before you come back, okay? And you'll hit bottom. I mean, you'll hit zero. That is a method for meditating on emptiness. that is a method of establishing the truth of emptiness. Sooner or later, you will hit, you'll get tired actually. You'll never hit the bottom, okay? You'll decide that's far enough, okay? Okay? What's that process called? What is that method of establishing the truth of emptiness? Okay? This is it. Tanye means term. And you, being a Madhyamika scholar, understand that the word term in Madhyamika means that mental picture that even amoebas have. Okay? When you read some book about emptiness and they say imputation of the term, don't forget bugs are doing it too. Okay? Sorry, Mr. Hopkins. But anyway, don't forget even bugs are doing it, you see? It's a mental picture. It's however fuzzy for a worm or whatever. This is Dangjin Tenge. This is the one that all animals, all beings have from the moment of their birth, right? You are creating pictures. And they're called terms, okay? Tanye, Dakpe, Dakpa means to apply it, to apply, to impose that picture. Remember when I turned over the transparency? That's Dakpa. To apply or to impose the image over the raw data. What raw data? Oh, that's also an image. And it's applied over its own raw... over its own image, which is... You see? It goes endlessly. Right? Dakdun. Dakdun means the thing that God applied the image to. The thing that the image was applied to. You can call it raw data, but in this case, it implies raw data, which is really raw data, in the sense of that's the end of the raw data. It doesn't have its own parts. Is there such a thing? No, there is no such thing. When you look for something, some collection of parts that was thought of in a certain way, which is not itself thought of in a certain way, where it has parts that are not going through the same stuff, you're going to find what? When you look for the atom, what are you going to come up with? When you look for the one moment of present time, present consciousness, what are you going to come up with? Forget it. There isn't anything like that. Tani tapi taktun. Sawa means to go looking for it. Sawa means go looking for it. Sena means at that moment, at that time, manye, you ain't gonna find nothing. Okay? Manye. I'll translate it. Ready? When you go looking for the thing, that you thought of in a certain way, you'll never find anything. Except something new that you're thinking of in a certain way. And the implication is, by the way, if you go looking for the final raw data, the atom, the present moment of my mind, there ain't no such thing. You're gonna draw a blank, and that blank is emptiness. Okay, I like that expression actually. You will draw a blank, and that blank is the meaning of emptiness. Okay, there is no raw data, there are no atoms, there is no present moment of consciousness. Any worldview which says there are has to be mistaken and must ultimately fail its purpose of bringing happiness to a human being. And all other views except the view of karma and emptiness fail and cannot bring happiness to a human being. Okay? They cannot achieve the goals of a view. Okay? A little more, okay? Okay. Let's see if we've covered everything. Now I can start the second half of the class. Yeah. Hang on one sec. Can I say again? I'm sorry, say again? Oh, he, Jay asked me to translate this thing here, which you had. Gyun means the stream of your consciousness. The stream of your mind. Okay? We don't talk about your mind in terms of the whole of the parts. We talk about your mind in terms of the stream of the parts. Okay? Just get used to that. With a static object, like your body, we talk about the whole of the parts. With a moving object, like time or your mind, we talk about the stream of the parts, meaning the collection of parts over time. Okay? Kechik means, kechikma means instance. Shepa means of awareness. Okay? Your mind is a big collection of instance of awareness, which is called a stream. Okay? In the same way that your body is a big collection of little atoms. And if you go looking for the present moment of consciousness, and you go looking for an atom, you're going to draw a blank. Okay. Okay, last thing. I was giggling in the car doing this lesson because I knew what torture it would be for you guys. I'll give the last one is really cool. By the way, the last thing tonight, just so you can hold out till then, is the proof of the end of samsara. Okay? Is the proof of the end of suffering. And it comes in the Bodhisattva Charavatara tonight. Okay? But to get there you have to finish this. Okay. Which is still more suffering. Okay. By the way, I'm sorry to go on so long. I hate classes when I'm in them as a student that go on too long. But there's no way we can cover the ninth chapter unless we do this. And I could either, you know, you could either go home and never hear half of the ninth chapter, which is what happened to a lot of the monks listening to Master Shantideva, right? maybe this is why. Maybe he was trying to go. He did it in one afternoon, right? Or you can stay a little longer. So that's the way it's going to be. Okay, say chula, mikpe, ningje. Chula, mikpe, ningje. We have talked tonight about two kinds of emptiness. The emptiness of Michael Roach, and for you it's you, okay? And the emptiness of the parts of Michael Roach. So until you intellectually understand the what I said, when I said there ain't no atoms, there is no atoms, forget it, get used to it. You're the first people who are going to have correct view in this country, seriously. Forget it. That's not why things work, and it's not what things are made of. Things are made of your projections. There are no atoms. You know, if a bumper is hard, it's your projection. If a hard bumper hits your leg and breaks it, it's your projection. They're coming from the same thing. It's better than science. It explains why you were standing in front of the cab. Okay? Seriously. Okay? And then there's the emptiness of my parts, my mind and my body. We did that. The question being, why did Master Shantideva get to this problem? You know, how did he get here? Well, the first answer, which is on your homework, is that it's the natural question that comes up in your mind. When I say, you know, whether your boss seems nice or mean is just a projection. If you're an intelligent person, you should start asking, but is he a projection too? And the answer is yes. But is the redness of his face a projection too? Yes. Is the left side of the redness of his face a projection too? Yes. Goes down to atomic level. Is the atom which causes his face to absorb more green and blue from the spectrum and thereby be red, is that one self-existent? No. Okay. Never even done with that. But the reason that the bridge that Master Shantideva uses to get from the emptiness of the person to the emptiness of the person's parts is compassion. You wouldn't expect it. Okay. The bridge where he goes from one section to the next section is compassion. Why? You got to remember this. It's on your homework. That's how I keep you awake at 9:30. The opponent, right? These bad mind-only guys and everything, whoever it was, they come up and say, look, Master Shantideva, there must be atoms. Why? Because if there's no atoms, there's no person. And if there's no person, how can you get to Buddhahood? And Master Shantideva says, what are you talking about? He says, if there's no suffering people around, how can you ever have compassion? Who are you going to have compassion for if there's nobody there? You know, according to you, Mr. Madhyamika, there's nobody there. So how's anyone ever going to get compassion? And if nobody can get compassion, how can anyone get enlightened? This whole stuff is meaningless, stupid. You know, if what you're trying to prove is true, we can't have compassion because there's no people. So what are you going to have compassion towards? Okay. And then Master Shantideva says, come on. It's because they're empty that they're people. It's because they're empty that they suffer. It's because they're empty that we can have compassion for them. And especially it's because they're empty that we can lead them to nirvana and Buddhahood. Because if they were self-existent, we couldn't change them. Okay. If they existed from their own side, and if they didn't exist from their projections upon themselves, they could never reach enlightenment. They can only get to an angel's body because their body is empty, because it's a projection. They can only have an omniscient mind because their mind is empty, because it's a projection. Okay? Not only do you not disprove me, you prove me. Okay? They could never get to enlightenment if they weren't empty. It's not like because they're empty they could never get to enlightenment. It's because they are empty that they can get to enlightenment. If this arm was self-existent, if this had atoms that had a certain kind of nature from their own side, and not as my projection forced on me by my karma, Michael Roach would be stuck in this arm until the day he died. And there'd be no reason to sit in a Buddhism class. You can go to one of those other classes where you learn to be calm while your arm is dying. Okay? All right? Seriously, okay? There's no reason to be in a real Buddhism class. If that arm is self-existent, then I'm going to die for sure. Then I shouldn't be here. There's no reason to be here. Okay? But it's because it's not self-existent that I can do something for somebody. I can have compassion for somebody. I can teach them about this stuff. They can get to have a tantric deity's arm. You know? That's because it's empty, I should have compassion for them. It'd be useless to have compassion for them if they weren't empty because I couldn't do anything for them anyway. Okay? That's how he goes from the emptiness of the person to the emptiness of the person's parts. It's on the question of why have compassion if there's no people? He says, stupid head, there's people because they're empty. Okay? I don't mean to say there's no people because they're empty. I say there are people because they're empty. You didn't get what I mean when I said empty. Okay? All right? Cook that. Now, you can imagine three people coming up to normal Joe Blow suffering being. Okay? And they have three different understandings of emptiness. Okay? Guy number one, guy number two, guy number three. Okay? Guy number one comes up to this person and doesn't understand their emptiness yet. They're feeling compassion for this suffering person, but they don't understand their emptiness yet. Okay? But let's say they have come to a sort of sophisticated Buddhist understanding that this person is changing by the instant. Okay? At least they don't believe in a permanent soul. At least they don't believe in some guy that's running the show. At least they got over that. You know, they don't believe there's a Michael Roach outside of my body and mind that's somehow controlling them. Could you please not die tonight? You know, like that. There is no such guy. But there is a level of feeling where you believe in that. And people throughout history have believed in some kind of soul or some kind of person who controls the body and mind. Oh, let's not have those thoughts today. Let's not get AIDS today. You know, like you could control your body. Let's not lose this shirt tonight. Okay? Let's not get sick tonight. You know? They mistake. They think they have control. They think there's a person running the show. There's not. At least that person who understood that person's impermanence, that they're changing by the instant, would at least understand that. People who have that kind of compassion are called Chula Mipe Nyingje. Okay? Say Chula Mipe Nyingje. Nyingje means compassion. Nyingje means compassion. Mikpa means to focus on that. Focusing on the person that way. It's a compassion which focuses on the person and sees what? Ch. What's ch? Dharma. Ch means things. Okay? Things. But you learn tonight that it has another special meaning. Parts of a person. Okay? So remember, when you talk about this kind of compassion, we're talking about a sort of sophisticated Buddhist who, when they look at someone suffer, they are watching their parts. They're watching the parts of that person. In what sense? We'll get there, okay? They're watching the parts of the person in the sense that they understand that the person is changing from moment to moment. Okay? What's that got to do with their parts? Well, if you could understand that they were changing from moment to moment, you'd probably get to the point where you didn't believe that there was some eternal, unchanging them. At least you would get there. Okay? How's the logic go from there? One second. Oh, it says, and then you would start seeing them as some whole soul, eternal thing running them. Okay? If you saw them changing from moment to moment, you would understand that there's no Michael Roach who's running the show. And eventually that would get you to see that the real Michael Roach is an idea on his parts, which are called dharma, ch, things. Okay, and that's why this viewpoint is called the compassion that looks at the person and sees things, meaning their parts. This compassion eventually will understand that the person is an idea on their parts. Okay, that's one way of having compassion. That's one way of having compassion. Okay. You could see this kind of compassion getting into teaching somebody karma. Because this kind of compassion understands that how that person sees themselves depends on what kind of karmas they're having. Like, this is a pretty good compassion. This is a great compassion. This kind of compassion would come up to somebody and say, hey, could you please collect some good karma so that you could see your parts a little better than you are now? Okay? All right? It's a pretty good compassion. This is a much better compassion than, oh, gee, you don't have anything to eat. Could I help you? Why don't they have anything to eat? They don't have the karma to see raw data as food, okay? Or to see it as their food, okay? They maybe have the karma to see it in Starbucks window, and they don't have the money to buy it. You see what I mean? They don't have the karma to see it as their food. If you want to feed the hungry of this planet, teach them correct view. You see? That's where food comes from. That's what creates food. It's very cool. So this kind of compassion is very cool. Eventually, it will reach the point where it understands that how this person sees their life will depend on how moral they are or how compassionate they are. That's a very cool kind of compassion. Okay, what's the next kind of compassion? By the way, there's three. And then you can probably go home. Okay. Say Mi'kmaq ki Nyingje. Mi'kmaq ki Nyingje. I translated it as, by the way, the first one is called The Compassion Which Focuses Upon Things. And you knows what things means now, right? The second kind of compassion is called the compassion which focuses on nothing. The compassion which focuses on nothing. This compassion looks at a suffering being and says, they are nothing at all what they seem to be. That's the nothing, you see? They are nothing self-existent. They are nothing that exists from their own side. They are nothing that has any nature of their own. They are nothing that has any atoms. They are nothing that has any present moment of mind. They are nothing which resides or which is controlled by the rules of science or economic theory or capitalism or socialism or any other kind of ism. That's not how they work. They are nothing like that. And that's the meaning of nothing here. Nothing is concentrating on their emptiness. They are not all of those other things that Mrs. Melvin and everybody else taught me. You don't have to think those thoughts. Okay? By the way, don't blame Mrs. Melvin. Who made her? Mr. Karma. Who sent him to make her? You. Okay? You had the bad luck, frankly, to live in a world for 30 or 40 years and have people inundate you with viewpoints that don't work. Okay? You have a choice now. You know, figure it out. See which one brings happiness to a sentient being. Try it. You know, try morality and emptiness and see if it works. You know, and confirm it. If you, by the way, you get two reactions to that. Some people really go out and try it earnestly by keeping their books in a sincere way, and they get results. And you don't have to convince them anymore. You know, their life changes noticeably, and they start to get on a roll. It's an upward spiral. And then you see these other people that say, it doesn't work. And you say, do you keep your book? And they say, no. Nah. They either say no or they say not very well, which means no also. And they're miserable. And Dharma's not working for them. And they say, I don't really believe in this viewpoint. And Master Shantideva said what last class? Somebody says, I've been trying this generosity thing. I didn't get rich. It's bullshit, you know. He said, don't give me that. You didn't really try it, did you? Well, you know, I did give away, you know, like $5, and I mean, you know. And he's like, no, we're talking the practice of generosity as presented in the Bodhisattva Charitara. Did you try that over an extended period with your whole heart and your whole resources? And they say, well, no. So he's like, well, what did you expect, you know, okay? So what I'm saying is you can confirm this worldview. It's confirmable, okay? And that kind of compassion sees that other worldviews don't work and rejects other worldviews. It's saying the person is nothing which is created by any other force than karma and emptiness. Okay? And that is the coolest kind of compassion. That's the one that gets you to a Buddha paradise. It's so cool that if you had to write a praise of the greatest Buddhist scholar of Tibet ever produced, you might start it out saying, Mi'kmaq tsewe derchen chen re si. Okay? That's Mi'kmaq. Okay? Mi'kpa mepe tsewa means love. Nyingje. Okay? They wrote a mantra in honor of Jetsun Kapa. That's the first line of the mantra. You know, Mi'kmaq. You have that kind of compassion. Oh, you're so great. Okay? Third kind of compassion, and then we're done, unless you don't want the key to get out of samsara. Say Semchen, Tamla, Mikpe, Ningje. Semchen, Tamla, Mikpe, Ningje. Semchen means living being. Living being. Tam means just a plain old Joe. Okay? Semchen Tam. Plain old living being. Mikpe Nyingje, the compassion which is focusing on a plain old people. It's not thinking, oh, is this being changing by the instant? It's not thinking, is this being unchanging? It's not thinking, is this person a projection or not? It's just sorry that there's poor people. It's just sorry that people have to suffer. It's looking out after them as well. It's giving them a place to sleep, giving them something to eat, okay? This is the lowest kind of compassion, okay? Why? It doesn't address the root of the problem, okay? The reason they're poor is that they haven't practiced bodhisattva activities. They haven't been generous. Do you have to be Donald Trump to be generous? That's not the point. Where it says in the Bible, you know, the lady who gave the penny got the most good karma. That's true. You know, but the point is that you give what you have, all that you have. You see what I mean? And just to try to give people things is not going to solve the problem. What is the problem? And then you can go home if you guess the problem. Huh? The problem is that the normal human mind thinks the best way to get money is to save and conserve and protect the money that you have, right? I mean, it's ignorant activity as far as money making. It would seem to a normal human being that the best way to collect a large amount of money would be to carefully protect it from other people. And the last thing you'd want to do would be to share it, okay? The best way, according to all human values up to the present time, they're going to change now, right? Is that the way to get a lot of money would be to protect the money you have and try as hard as you can to remove other people's money. You see what I mean? No, I mean, that's, you believe that. You know, people believe that. It's just ignorance. Why? Because having a lot of money is a projection. How do you get that projection? You give away your money. Okay? As much as you can. With as much love as you can. Okay? That's the way you get rich. I don't believe it. Didn't work for me. Master Shantideva says, bullshit. You didn't really try it. You know, he says, come on, you didn't really try it. Try it. Try it over an extended period of time to give away all your wealth. Money will come to you. The big problem then will be accounting for it. You know, like trying to get all the receipts there, you know, all the money that you had, you know, you can't keep track of it, you know, I mean, seriously, okay? So the real root of suffering is the misperception, for example, that money comes from hoarding it and getting it from others and keeping it for you. It's a misperception. The root of samsara, the root of all suffering, is the belief in atoms. It's not what makes the taxi's bumper hard. It's not what makes your boss mean or nice. And it's not what got you money or didn't get you money. And it's not what made you die or not die. It's not atoms. And it's not viruses. It's your karma, okay? It's your morality. It's your compassion, okay? That's where it really came from. Now, last question. Somebody comes up to Master Shantideva during this section and says, come on, is it really possible for a human being to stop this tendency of seeing things this way? You know, I believe everything you said. It all sounds logical to me. I understand that if I want to get rich, I should give away all my money, etc. But is it really possible? You know, in the end of human evolution, will every being achieve liberation from suffering or not? Is it possible for every living being to stop suffering? And he says, sure it is. And they say, prove it. And he says, it's true because you can stop the misperception that we have. We can stop those misperceptions. And then they say, prove it. And he says, they are a lie. They are standing on one leg. You know, they have this thing about the truth stands on two legs and the lie stands on one. And he says almost exactly the same thing. Shantideva says, Master Shantideva says, come on, seeing the world that way, that you get rich by grabbing money from other people, is a lie. And that's like a guy standing on one leg. And seeing that it really comes from generosity and giving is the truth. And it stands on two legs. And if a two-legged guy gets in a punch out with a one-legged guy, who do you think's going to win? You know? And he says that. He says the correct view, being truth, is very, very powerful. And the tendency of seeing things as self-existent, which is the root of all suffering, is very, very crappy compared to that. Very weak. Once you get the smell, as you have in this room, everybody in this room has got a little smell now of the truth. One thing, you'll never forget it. Second thing, now that the seed has been planted, that worldview is going to wipe out the other worldview. If you put them on head-to-head, if they go head-to-head, you know, Super Bowl 33, you know, all the viewpoints that Mrs. Melvin taught you are going to lose. They can't stand up to this viewpoint. Sooner or later, the truth will out. You know, the truth will overcome the misperception. Therefore, suffering can be ended. Therefore, there is an end to samsara, because the truth is more powerful than the misperception. Okay. In the monastery, when you finish your Geshe degree, they come up and they say, the last question, and you have to put your hat on, you know, it's like this struggle to keep it on. They let you take it off after a few minutes, you know, and you hold it the whole time in your hand. And then they like give you a sign like, time for the last question, you know. And then you put your hat on because it's coming, the last question is coming, okay. And they say, ready? Korolatab, mebechir, which means, does samsara have an end? And you say, and they say,
no!
And they say, prove it. And you say, yeah, because the truth is more powerful than the misperception. And then everybody goes, yay! Yay! And then they all run home and have tea, you know. Okay. That is the last debate in a Geshe.
Sashi Bhagi Jashimeta Sham Vira Vinci Nyende Yampadi Sange Shindu Mite Uwagi Jogo Namda Shimla Shubha
This is the end of Class 6. You have been listening to A Guide to the Bodhisattva Way of Life, Part 3, with Geshe Michael Roach, presented by the Asian Classics Institute. The Asian Classics Institute is dedicated to preserving the pure teachings and practice of Buddhism. For a listing of other topics available, write to the Asian Classics Institute, P.O. Box 20373, New York, New York, 10009, or call 212-475-7752.